You're listening to JTE Movie Thinks. Is that the title? Is that correct grammar? All right, we'll go with it. It's a show about movies and thinking. And now, here's your host, every man's hero, JTE.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of JTE Movie Thinks. Once again, I am back to talk movies with my friends, and I have a dear friend here today, everybody. He's back, the man, the myth, the legend, the comedian, the one, the only, the Raw, Mark Ellis.
It is great to be back with you, buddy. The last time we did a Movie Thinks episode together, you just mentioned this. It was you, me, and Finstock, and we were drenched from just playing basketball.
Yes.
And we were talking John Woo movies.
Yep.
And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, we actually took a special field trip.
Right. My parents signed the permission slip.
Exactly. And we went to one of my favorite theaters in L.A. called the New Beverly.
Yeah.
Which just shows, like, crazy-ass 80s, 90s, 70s, as far as the 60s and 50s, really. It's a theater Tarantino took over.
Yeah, it's basically his wet dream. It's like a lot of martial arts movies or old-timey westerns. A lot of his movies play there, too.
This whole month they're playing The Hateful Eight, and, like, this weekend they're playing it with The Thing. John Carpenter's The Thing as a double bill.
Ooh.
I mean, that's like a five-hour commitment.
It's worth it.
Yeah, it is worth it. And a lot of people say The Thing. He said The Thing, I think he said his interviews, or I read it somewhere, was definitely inspiration for that movie.
I understand that with, like, everybody's enclosed and you're trying to find out what's going on. Tarantino seems like such a fun guy and maybe the worst guy to work at a video store if you just want to rent a movie and get the hell out of there. Because he used to work there. That's how he started out, you know, in showbiz, if you want to call it that. But he's one of those guys that used to work at your local video store and you just want to rent a movie and get the hell home, and he will talk your ear off about why your pick is right or why your pick is wrong.
Depending who you are, me going into that video store, I love this guy. If you're just some, you know, Joe Schmo who's not a big movie geek and just wants to rent the newest Kevin James movie, then I can understand.
I just want to rent The Zookeeper and go home.
Then, I could understand why you're like, ugh. But, I love that theater. And The Killer, I love showing movies to new people.
Yeah, and I loved watching it because it reminded me, it was, like I mentioned on the show, it was like watching a comic hone their material that would later be used in something like Hard Target, which is one of the movies I loved growing up. And so, and I love talking movies with you because I feel like you and I in an alternate universe, or maybe not an alternate universe, but a universe that existed 30 years ago, we might not be comedians and talking movies for a living. We would actually be the guys that worked at where I grew up, Video Update, and we would be the guys that would be judging customers as soon as they walk out the door. Can you believe that jackass just rented that movie again?
I could totally see that. I see you as like almost a Ryan Reynolds was in Waiting. And I was like the Justin Long a little bit.
Yeah, will Christian be Dane Cook then? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. He's the cook. He's the manager of the store, I guess. So much good stuff. Let's just talk a little bit about Schmoes. No, we've been on a little bit of hiatus.
The live show has been.
The last show, Phase 6.
Yeah. And the only, and I love reading the comments about when's Phase 6 coming. And I do because it means
I get it all the time.
The fans still care about it, you know?
Of course.
And I can tell everybody it's very, very soon in the works. And we've been saying that for a while. And sometimes things get frustrated when you get right down to the finish line. But in the meantime, it's not like we've gone away and we've been in Tahiti. Like, we've still been seeing movies and getting the reviews out to you guys. I've been on the road doing a lot of stand-up. Christian's been doing a lot of cool stuff for Fandango. He went to Sundance.
Yeah.
So we've been staying busy and active in the movie community.
I'm trying to... It's weird because we're all doing so many different things. Like, me and Ken over here doing stuff at Screen Junkies. You got Riley doing stuff for Geek Nation. Mm-hmm. You guys are so busy with Collider and Jedi Council. Bakuga's doing Collider after shows now. I feel like it's like... I'm trying to think of a reference of a great group that split up, had great individual stuff, and then they're coming back together for a great... Not reunion, but just like a great second.
Well, it's something that might factor into our conversation later, is that it's kind of like we're the Eagles, you know, where where you just had all the success in the 70s and then Glenn Frey goes off and has a nice solo career. Don Henley blows up all over the place.
Okay.
And then Joe Walsh is doing stuff. Timothy B. Schmidt's doing stuff. Don Felder's doing different things. And then it takes 10, 15 years to finally get the guys in a room together and say, hey, guys, we can sell out stadiums. Let's do this. And it's not going to take us that long, but it's something that we're going to be very excited about. And once it comes back, all this stuff, all these question marks go away.
Yeah.
But understand, until that happens, everybody's waiting.
It's going to be bigger, better.
It's going to be great. And we can't wait to have everybody who has been an alumni of Schmoes Know to this point come back and celebrate with us.
And finally, the conclusion of the ultimate Schmodown.
Oh, right, between that's, me and, yeah, and yeah, little old I, box office breakdown. Breakdown. Christian and I talk about it.
Okay. I know you guys talk about it, and you guys sound very confident.
We talk about it. You know what it is? It's like the college football season, which we never wanted it to be like this, because college football season, you play the regular season, and then you find out if you're in the national championship, and then you know what you do? You wait for a month and a half to actually play the game, and everybody gets fat and out of shape over Thanksgiving and Christmas, and that might be us. Like we might waddle onto this set. Okay. It might be four guys who get every round one question wrong until we get our wits about us again, and then the second and third round. But I can tell you this. I know you and Finstock are very theatrical people. You guys are going to have a great production for the introductions. Nothing is going to beat what Christian, George Harloff, and I have in the works when we get introduced.
Okay, interesting. So, well, so you're telling me I need to step up my entrance game.
You guys might see our entrance and then just concede the game to us. It's going to be that dynamic.
Really? Yeah. Okay, that's interesting. Now I'm thinking of what the ideas we've had. Okay, I need to run to a celebrity right before the entrance and like just come out with like Tom Cruise or something.
That would be
like as Maverick. Hysterical. I don't know something. So I need to go big now, and I don't even know what to do. You're playing mind games with me, and I don't even know what to do for entrance.
I didn't know I could get in your head this easy, but maybe that's why you wear the hat. Maybe you're like Magneto.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get to the meat of the show.
Let's do it.
JT Moo Things, I'm going to ask you, Mark Ellis, what's the last movie you watched from beginning to end? Now, I say this for a lot of my people, come on here. Right. You're not just any, well, you are a schmo, but you're not any average schmo. You go to press screenings. You have to see movies. It's your job.
Yeah, man.
I want to know what's the last movie you watched because you wanted to.
Oh.
Or maybe it's something you caught on TV. Maybe it's something that was on Netflix that you hadn't watched yet, and you're like, you know what? I always wanted to see this. Well, you know what? I need to rewatch this again. Or maybe it's a movie you had on your shelf, and you just dusted it off. So you know what? I need to watch Hard Target for the 100th time.
Okay, fine. If you don't want to talk about Deadpool, then we won't talk about Deadpool.
I don't want to talk about Deadpool because I haven't seen it yet, like the rest of America.
Totally your call. Well, it's funny, and I always do watch a lot of movies, even in my spare time when I can. So one of the ones that I actually did watch very, very recently was the documentary History of the Eagles, which is phenomenal. So we can have that as a backup if you've already talked about the movie that I caught most recently. I watch a lot of movies on planes.
Okay.
I had some that were rented on iTunes that I thought about watching. I could have watched Casino. I could have watched Sleeping with Other People, I believe, the new Jason Sudeikis movie.
Yeah, with Austin Brie.
I had those in, and then I start perusing through the free movies that American Airlines offers on their, you know, transcontinental flights. I'm going from Boston back to L.A., and I see all these cool movies. I'm like, man, they have a lot of good options for free. And then I come across a movie that I'm like, I don't know that I've ever actually seen the end of this, and it's the Steven Spielberg, Tom Cruise hit Minority Report.
Oh, okay.
Have you talked about Minority Report yet?
No, I'd love to talk about this movie.
Let's do it,
it's,
man.
It's one of my, I mean, Tom Cruise and Spielberg connected on two films together.
Mm-hmm.
War of the Worlds, Minority Report.
Right.
In my book, Minority Report is a much better film.
Yeah, War of the Worlds is so exciting to watch happen, to watch the exposition go down and see what's happening. Then after that, it kind of peters out. Once they start, you know, turning humans into spaghetti noodles, it's like, okay, I see what we're doing
here. Spaghetti noodles? But, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying.
But Minority Report is something that I love when I watch a movie, and it's not only a great, like, action sci-fi premise, but it, like, challenges the viewer to think, to maybe even take a side as far as like policy and government and what should be policed and what should not be policed. And can you really, you even get into a legal case with that, where it's like, can you actually prosecute for something that hasn't actually happened yet? So it's just so fascinating on multiple levels.
Let me ask you this. You said you weren't sure if you saw the ending.
Yeah.
Was this a movie that you caught in? You didn't, obviously didn't catch it in theaters.
No, I didn't. I remember renting it. It was maybe one of the last movies I rented from Video Update. Was it came out, and I was maybe tired or something. And I fell asleep, and I just missed it and just didn't have a chance. I had to be kind and rewind and, you know, get it back to the video store on time. And I just never actually caught
the
ending.
That's so interesting to me. That's so interesting to me.
Yeah.
Let me just. So for me, as a film geek growing up, a new Spielberg film was out, I'm seeing it in the theaters no matter what.
Right.
What was going on in Mark Ellis' life where he's like, I don't need to see a new Spielberg film with the biggest star in Hollywood. Like, what was it? Was movies just not your priority at that time?
I guess you could say that. I mean, I was probably somewhere, I think the movie came out 2002, 2003,
around
somewhere
area,
around
yeah.
there. And so I was probably just graduating from college and living with my first girlfriend and writing jokes and preparing to go on this stand-up journey.
Okay.
Which I would later embark on. So, because I don't think Minority Report had come out by when I had gotten to LA. I think it was already had been released before mm-hmm. that. So that's my best guess. But there really is no excuse. I mean, you're right. It's a Spielberg movie, and which is enough to get me in the theater. It's a Tom Cruise movie, enough to get me in the theater. Mm-hmm. I was always a huge Colin Farrell fan. Going way back, he always had some sort of screen panache that I thought he could do big things with.
Do you remember what movie was an introduction to you for? Because a lot of people, I think Minority Report was an introduction to them for Colin Farrell.
It was a Minority Report. I want to say he was in SWAT before that, or maybe the Pacino movie, The Recruit, but I can't actually remember.
I'm
you know what?
Sure SWAT was after.
Minority Report might have been the movie that put him on the map for me, and I was like, I like this guy.
Okay.
And then I went out. And I've seen some of the movie. Okay. I mean, I'd seen at least a good hour of it, but actually getting to watch the whole thing was a really cool experience, and it's a great immersive film to watch on an airplane, because you're all of a sudden not thinking about how long you have to sit in the seat for. You're actually, it's one of those movies where you don't want the pilot to come on and say,
gotcha,
you gotta turn your computer off because I want to see the end of this movie.
I gotcha. And I think Colin Farrell's first film that really like put him, not like on the A-list or anything like that, but put him on the radar was a film by Joel Schumacher called Tigerland, which was a very low budget movie, which is very much takes place like, I think it's a Vietnam era film, but it all takes place during the boot camp.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that happens in Hollywood a lot. An actor does like one of these smaller films, then all these big studios want to start casting little things. Spielberg is really good at that. He takes a good character actor and gives him little roles in his films, and like 4 or 5 years later, that actor is now a huge A-list star.
Yeah, once you get past all the great storytelling and the huge effects ability and the way that he's able to work with the cast he also has a great eye for talent.
Yes,
in front of and behind the camera.
Yeah.
He's good at mentoring, and even somebody like Michael Bay, who he produces all the Transformers movies. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, Spielberg is able to see the talent that Michael Bay has. Or somebody like Robert Zemeckis, where he's just able to see the innate ability, and that it needs to be nurtured and coddled a little bit. And it's great to have somebody like Spielberg be your mentor. Somebody like Colin Trevorrow, who, when Steven Spielberg when he needed to talk to Spielberg about making Jurassic World, Spielberg's around for him. When he wanted to go make his movie, Spielberg's like, I'm hands off. You guys let me know if you need anything.
Now, we say about that, like, Spielberg kind of bring on a protege. A lot of people are saying J.J. Abrams is kind of like his protege right now. But look at what made him think, I'm doing Transformers at DreamWorks with, you know, Paramount or whatever company. I believe it's Paramount. Why do you think he went to Michael Bay?
Money.
So it was just money. You don't think he was like, I have a hard time believing. Like, I understand Michael Bay is a great director when it comes to action scenes and technical wise.
Right.
But what made you think, like, why would Spielberg just be like, I think this is the guy?
Because he had already tackled big budget Hollywood projects. You know, he had already done big action movies.
Armageddon,
The Rock. And those were fun movies. Yep. I mean, you can say it's not Oscar bait, but you're not trying to do that with Transformers either.
True,
so if I go back and I watch The Rock and I watch Armageddon and I see Bad Boys and Bad Boys 2, I'm like, this is the guy I want doing Transformers. And a little bit of that is why we still to this day will get tricked into the theater.
Yeah.
Because we'll see a trailer. And we'll see how cool it looks, and because Michael Bay's great at putting stuff on screen, even the fight scenes in Transformers piss me off. They maybe piss me off more than anything else in those movies, because you can't really tell what's going on. But going into it, it's just like a team that looks great on paper that just, for whatever reason, does not get it done.
I understand that. Like, for me, it's like, I understand the first movie. And for me, the first Transformers is still the best film. And I feel like that's the film where he had the most input in, like the whole thing with the boy in his car. Apparently, that's what Spielberg really kind of told Bay to put into the movie.
Sure.
And unfortunately, I think at that, because it was such a big hit, Spielberg just said, all right, Bay, it's yours now. And that's why we got Transformers Revenge of Fallen. That's why we got Dark Side of the Moon. And to me, the worst in the series was the fourth one, Age of Extinction.
I think we're on the same page with that. But, you know, if you're Spielberg and you're working on your own movies, you know, it's like you're doing Lincoln and you're directing Daniel Day-Lewis. You're actually directing Abraham Lincoln, because Daniel Day-Lewis hasn't showed up to set in 3 weeks. The guy won't even take a cell phone now. You're actually talking to an 1860s character.
True.
And then you get a text from Michael Bay asking something. It's like, yeah, do whatever the hell you want. I have Scrooge McDuck kind of money because of the movies you made.
That's
and I don't have to do anything. Go off and make your movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just cashing a check making those movies at this point. You're guaranteed $1 billion worldwide every time you make one, no matter how bad it is. And he's doing the fifth one, so.
Yeah, I know. And now I'm going to have confidence going into that one, because I love 13 Hours so much. It's like there's just.
That's right. Can we touch on that a little bit?
Sure.
Just a tad. I'm not, you know, saying I disagree with you.
You're welcome to.
I ain't welcome to, but were you prepared for all the comments and the feedback. It wasn't like negative, really. It was just shock that we got 5 out of 5.
The whole me giving a perfect score to 13 Hours thing actually played out exactly like I thought it might.
Okay.
Where it did bring some more attention to the review than it would have anyway, which is not why I did it. I'm not a stunt kind of, you know, score, but yeah. I did it because I actually felt that way about the movie, and so I knew there would be a backlash because people, A, either just couldn't believe that it was a Michael Bay movie that I liked that much, B, people thought that I was being super American and patriotic, which I wasn't, and also people can't believe that it was going to be a perfect movie, and they hadn't seen it yet. That review came out on a Tuesday and Wednesday, so people can't rush to the theater and see it. They have to sit on the fact that Mark Ellis gave this movie a perfect score for like 3 or 4 or 5 days before they're able to go actually see the movie. But I also knew that once people go and see the movie, there's going to be a contingent, albeit a minority contingent, but still a group of people that are going to see that and actually come tell me that they agree with me. And that happened too. I got a lot of tweets about people saying, you know what, I'm shocked too, but I actually love this movie.
Interesting, because I, you know, obviously I look at the comments and all that. For me, it's you have to go on to the director's obviously past work. So I think that's what made it hard for some people to swallow. It's like me coming to you saying like, Bogut for the Warriors is playing like LeBron James.
Right.
Like nothing I've seen or his stats tell me that he could do something like this.
Right. Or even somebody like DeMarcus Cousins who, because it's somebody who you don't like or somebody whose attitude in the past has turned you off. So it's like I'm already not rooting for this guy. And one of the jobs, I think, of a movie reviewer is just you go in there and you have to turn all the blinders off. Totally I can tweet out a Michael Bay joke 2 minutes before the movie starts. When the lights go down and the and the credits come up, I have to get all that crap out of my head and enjoy the movie that I'm watching as a singular entity and not as... Because you can watch 13 Hours and you can see Michael Bay-isms. And I noticed
them. Sure.
The slow motion and the way that the action transpires. But I thought that unlike the Transformers movies where that's a hindrance to those films, here... it actually accentuated the story that he was telling and the way that he was trying to make the viewer feel like we were actually there in the suck with these guys. And I never felt like I was a guy in a theater watching that movie. I always felt like I was right there in Benghazi suffering the same hardships as the soldiers.
Yeah, it's very interesting because I saw the movie and I agree. I think it's his best film since, I would say, the original Transformers.
I remember texting you afterwards and I said it's his best movie, including The Rock.
Including The Rock.
And you were already upset at me. You were livid.
I was just like, because here's the thing. I knew going in, like you said, you got to divorce yourself from the director and the subject matter.
Right.
The Rock is a fun action film.
It's a great action
film. So in my head, I said, well, if he's not trying to do anything like that, obviously he's going for a much more serious tone. So I could understand one when you said it to me, okay, I could understand that because it's such a different type of movie. So I went in with the mindset, like, I'm not expecting this to be better than The Rock because I think this is such a different movie from The Rock.
Right, and the break I gave it was that it's also based on a true story, which doesn't mean that I'm going to be, oh, well, this is about America, so I got to love it. It's because it's a true story, and so some of the times when they're waiting for the sun to come up and they're just kind of sitting there chilling, and a lot of people would say, man, you can cut a lot of this stuff out. Yeah. I don't want you to cut it out because it's making me feel like I'm there with these guys, not just when it's exciting, when it's boredom. You always hear people talk about being in Vietnam or being in a Gulf War when it's like, what war is it's 23 hours and 45 minutes of boredom and 15 minutes of sheer terror. So going through the action scenes, you have to have the other side of that if you really want to make the viewer feel like they're participating in this. So I didn't think there was anything extraneous in 13 Hours. Mm-hmm. The Rock has has a car chase that's in there Michael Bay wanted to wreck cars, you know?
I totally understand that. For me, like, I just recently rewatched The Hurt Locker. Best Picture winner.
Yeah.
Really good movie. I enjoy Zero Dark Thirty a little bit more than that film.
Which was also Bigelow, right?
Also Bigelow, Catherine Bigelow. Right. And for me, it's like when I watched that Michael Bay film, like you said, you felt like you were there with them.
Right.
For me, there was such a Hollywood sheen over the style of the movie that it was hard for me to feel like I was actually there. I always felt like I was watching somebody doing their version of it in a movie.
Okay, yeah, and I can understand that, and that's what I didn't feel like the movie was, but I understand. Yeah. I've seen those movies that you're talking about, and I've had that feeling, and it's like I can't quite get into it, but I think that a lot of people, and you know how picky of an eater I am, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm eating something that looks like pizza and I'm enjoying the hell out of it, then you tell me, oh, that's actually made out of mayonnaise and moldy bread. I'm like, what? Oh, gross. But I didn't know that going in, so I loved it. If you told people that Catherine Bigelow was the director of 13 Hours, I think people would have had a much higher opinion of that movie going in and maybe exiting.
I don't know if I could agree with that. It'd be because that movie screams to me, even though it's not doesn't have the Michael Bay comedy and some of the things that he's known for.
Because it's actually funny at times.
It is.
The comedy actually works in this movie.
I guess so. I thought it was okay, personally.
Oh, really? Okay.
But
that, yeah.
When I'm watching it, I just was always feel like I'm seeing a Hollywood product of this event. And for me, like, I think it's more of a personal thing. I want my war films to be a little more gritty, realistic, and just shot that way. Like,
watching
The Hurt Locker really kind of put my feelings at rest with it.
Yeah.
But then I think about Black Hawk Down, which Ridley Scott did such a good job shooting that film very beautifully, but yet it still felt real.
It was.
And it didn't really feel that way for me for 13 Hours, but I think that's just me personally.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I compare it more closely to something like Lone Survivor, where you have a lot of the close combat scenes in there, and it's the same situation with those directors, because Peter Berg is a guy, I think he gets a lot more respect in Hollywood than Michael Bay does, or, you know, amongst critic circles anyway.
Yeah.
But Peter Berg went and did a big-budget Transformers-y kind of movie, Battleship, and it was a train wreck.
So
it was on par with a Transformers 3 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes back to what he believes in, you know, moralistically, and what he's passionate about, and he makes a great film, like Lone Survivor. I think Michael Bay did the same thing, so I give the guy credit for being able to pull that off. Now, do I think Transformers 5 is going to suck?
Yeah.
I do. I think it's going to be I think he's going to wipe his ass with all the good ideas that genius writer's room came up with, and he's just going to sell a lot of Bud Light and make a lot of explosions. But
with models being, ducking missiles and stuff.
Right.
Sorry, we got off on a tangent. I just wanted to touch on the 13 Hours thing with you, because here's the thing. We're not doing a Schmoes No Show for past few months. These are conversations I would have with you.
I know.
Like, the second the score came out, I was like, I wish it was a Schmoes week just so we could all sit around and talk about this.
Yeah, and you and I locked eyes when I came in to do TV fights last week, and it was like, we have 19 things on the docket to talk about after this is done, and I had to run to a screening, so I apologize.
No, it's okay, but let's get back to Minority Report. We totally went off on a tangent there. Yeah. I think this is one of Spielberg's best films after the year 2000.
That's a great way to put it, because, like, if you do a top five Spielberg movies, there's no way Minority Report's getting in there.
No.
And it's no shame, because look at what you're going against Jaws and Jurassic Park and Schindler's List and all these, all-time great movies.
Yeah.
So Minority Report, I love the way it seems like it's got some sort of, like, weird futuristic filter, almost like a Matrix-y filter over the camera.
Yeah, it does have that, like,
it's like an Instagram filter.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it does kind of have that, which I love, and I love the technology in the film. It's one of the best, like, I think, representations of what the future could be.
Yeah.
Because everything kind of made sense, like the way his TV was, the way he was even doing drugs in the movie was, like, futuristic. The way, like, when you're walking through a door, like a store, it reads your retinal, and then it gives you ads that, like, go right to you, because they're probably searching your Facebook, your Twitter. They know exactly what to go for. And it's all, like, very smart, futuristic type things that I can't think of any movie really pulling it off like that since, really. Well, maybe since there have, but before that.
And I love the way that, because it's Spielberg who's given you that vision of the future, and I like the way that it took, like, even another movie that I really enjoy that maybe doesn't have as well-developed a picture of the future is Time Cop.
Because, yes.
You know, in Time Cop, they're still driving on surface roads, but they have these cars that drive themselves.
They're really bulky looking.
That technology, by the way, is right around the corner.
Yeah, oh, dude,
cars
Google
that are actually going to drive themselves.
Cars park themselves already.
It's horrifying and kind of cool at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time Minority Report comes around, you're just used to getting in your car and it's shuttling you wherever you need to go. But Tom Cruise is one of these guys that has some old school skill about him for whatever reason, however it was developed, to where he can get in a sports car and actually drive that thing around too. And that's one of the things that confuses some special agents, because they're flying around with their new technology, and Tom Cruise knows how to get back down to basics if he needs it. So he's like kind of like a guy that you want, like a Wolverine in Red Dawn, where he can you can throw the guy in the woods.
Yeah.
Even in the future, you can put him in the woods, and he knows how to adapt and survive. So, I mean, he is Tom Cruise. He's the ultimate action hero, and this is one of these movies that showcases why he has become one of the great heroes of all time.
Listen, Tom Cruise is known for being one of the best runners in Hollywood.
Dude, yeah, and
so anytime you put in a movie where he's on the run, like a la Fugitive,
yeah,
it's perfect.
I'm watching. I'm thinking like what his 40 time is, because when you watch football now and they do the sports science, they're like Cam Newton ran 19 miles an hour into the end zone, and like Tom Cruise, I'm like he's at least 15.
I mean that one of the best running scenes I think, and it's funny because I think if it was any other star, they wouldn't have done this. But in Mission Impossible 3, J.J. Abrams literally did a shot. It was just one long take of him running like full sprint while on the phone in Shanghai or something. Yeah. Or somewhere in China.
Yeah, and he looks fast. And then Colin Farrell chases after him.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that Tom Cruise, he always talks about, how he never wants to cheat the audience. So even though he didn't get to do the stunts of the level that he would do in like Mission Impossible 2, like dangling off a cliff, or in 4 where he's at the top of the building or hanging on a plane, he still wants to burn calories when he's making a movie.
You do get that admired part. One of my favorite scenes is when he's in that car and he's like, the law enforcement is like, boop, 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 lock him down, bring him to the police station. And he's jumping, and these cars go horizontal, like off the side of a building. Right. And he's literally jumping from like car to car.
Yeah.
And so it felt like a Mission Impossible type scene, even though you know it's all CGI.
Right, right. And even more so than the effects in this movie, which actually hold up pretty well.
Oh, really?
It's the way that he's having conversations with, first of all, with his team and the way that he interacts, and the way that him and Max von Sydow, who I forgot was in the movie, going back and forth.
Yep.
It's so good to see two screen, like you could say Tom Cruise is a legend too, and just watching them go back and forth, it's phenomenal to watch. And what I didn't remember about the movie that I don't know putting off is the wrong word, but it's the sense of humor the movie has is quirky, and
it's a little dark.
It's more pertinent in the film than I remember it being.
Okay.
And sometimes it gets a little too zany for me.
Are you talking about the refrigerator scene?
The refrigerator scene is one of them.
That is like a really, I thought it was funny and it was dark. That whole scene where he's getting his eye taken out.
Yeah.
They're getting replaced and all that. That whole thing had like, you got this crazy Russian scientist.
Right.
He's in this like really beat down, kind of like destroyed, some sort of abandoned hotel or apartment store.
I think it was the same place where Jack Nicholson's Joker got his makeup.
There you go, yeah. And like I could see there's definitely some dark comedy in this film. But that also leads right into one of my favorite scenes, is where they let out the little techno spiders and they're going from room to room and just like scanning people's eyes.
I love the techno spiders. Yes. The only thing that bugged me about the techno spiders is I'm watching that and I'm thinking that's where Spielberg told George Lucas, hey, we can do spiders in Indiana Jones 4. Yeah, no sweat. I just did these techno spiders. We'll do these spiders in Indiana Jones 4, and they'll look phenomenal.
When were there spiders in Indiana Jones 4?
There's that scene in Indiana Jones 4 when I think they're spiders, when they all come out of this thing, and it's just like the entire shot is encompassed by, it's either spiders or tarantulas or ants or something like that.
They're fire ants.
Maybe it's fire ants, yeah. And it's just like, you can see the wheels turning, and I'm like,
but at least these spiders are made of metal. Like
the sound design.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And he's in the bathtub, he submerges himself, and they still find him, and they like lift his eye. So that part's amazing. Here's one thing I really like about Spielberg and Tom Cruise: the two films they have done together, War of the Worlds and Minority Report. Even though they're really fun summer blockbuster movies, there's moments where Tom Cruise just gets to bring his A game in the acting department.
They're heavy.
Like War of the Worlds, there's a few scenes with his daughter. With Tim Robbins, like there's some great scenes where him and his daughter are just like, Tom Cruise is bringing his A game. I don't want to ruin it in case some people out there haven't seen Minority Report, but there's a hotel scene that takes place.
Right.
And it's this moment that they tease throughout the movie of like something happening.
Yeah.
Because he is literally in the movie, they're able to tell whether someone's going to murder somebody.
Right.
And
they have these precogs that will see a vision of the future, and sometimes it's premeditated murder, sometimes it's a crime of passion, and it doesn't matter because these precogs, they don't just go on intent, they go on what is actually going to happen. So even if JTE swears
he was not going to
murder somebody, if the precogs saw it, JTE was going to murder somebody, and he needs to get behind bars for it.
And that's what happens with Tom Cruise in the beginning of this movie. He's hit that he's going to kill somebody.
Yeah.
And he's like, just like JT would be, I ain't gonna kill nobody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the precogs feel otherwise, Josh.
The precogs feel otherwise. So there's a moment where that comes to a head in the film in the hotel. You know what? I want to spoil it. So listen for the next 30 seconds. I'm just gonna spoil this scene because it's one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie.
Do it.
If you haven't seen Minority Report at this point, you should have seen it.
Skip ahead about 30 seconds. Josh will go quick.
Yeah, I'll go quick. So basically, he gets there, and what we learn early in the film is that his son is abducted at a very young age, and it caused a split of him and his wife, and it just destroyed him as a human being. And I think that's part of the reason why he's in this police force stopping from people taking, killing people.
And he's also popping some pills at night.
So at this point, he gets to the hotel and he walks in. There's all these photos, and he realizes slowly that he's in the room of the man that kidnapped and killed his son.
Right, right.
And it's this great moment where the guy comes in, and Tom Cruise is just overbrought with emotion. And he, my favorite line in the movie goes, he goes, they're right, I am going to kill you.
Yeah.
And it's his delivery on that line is so emotional because you can see the rage underneath. I was like, damn, Tom Cruise is bringing it in this movie.
It's a great, and it's something, okay, you can, if you're tuning back in, you can listen. But it's something that I feel like a less capable filmmaker would have telegraphed where we're going with this movie.
Oh, okay.
And kind of showing you the through line, and it doesn't happen. And I'm not the best at watching. Yeah. Like, I can watch a horror movie, I have no idea who the killer is. But watching this movie, I never once was like, I see what we're trying to do here. I was always on the edge of my seat. Like, mm-hmm. I want to know what's going on. I want to know who this guy that we're going after is. I want to know why Tom Cruise is either going to kill somebody or why he was framed for killing somebody.
Because I assumed the whole time he's framed.
Yeah.
You don't really find out until later.
It's just scummy. And it, because Colin Farrell's character's like that. And he's mm-hmm. just this corporate bigwig who comes in, wants to flex his muscle. And so there's so many components and moving parts that it's just so well done. And it's not setting the world up that impressed me the most. It's the way that Spielberg was able to tie it together. And you just don't get that in a lot of filmmakers. That's where, like, a Michael Bay would need to sit down in class and take notes.
And he did a similar film in The Island that takes place in the future.
Right.
Very sci-fi.
Right.
Felt very similar to My Report in some ways. I think that, and I don't hate The Island. I think The Island's a decent film.
Yeah.
But you could see how someone like Michael Bay approaches it. And Michael Bay approaches it.
Right. And even something like Time Cop, where, you know, I like the way Peter Hyams put that movie together.
Yes.
But that movie just never got as ambitious because
it didn't have the budget.
Right. But the notion of the premonition of a crime versus time travel, because time travel can be boiled down to such a simplistic, I need to go back in time to change events. Whereas trying to change events that happen in the future, there's all these, like, moralistic questions as to why would I do that? Mm-hmm. Like, why would what about my mentality is going to change in the next 48 hours? It's going to drive me to such a state where I would want to murder somebody, or am I being set up? Like, it's just so many more questions that only a guy on the level of Spielberg can handle.
It's really interesting because you when you look at, like, all the classic time travel movies, mm-hmm. they say you can't go back and change things because of the butterfly effect.
Right.
I mean, yeah, on paper, I should go back and kill Hitler before he's a kid. But
I would like to watch that. Like,
I'd
like to watch you go back in time and be planted right at the brink of East Germany and just have you go. Like, we'll give you, I'll give you a one gun, uh-huh. and I'll give you, like, a knife and some camo.
Against baby Hitler?
Go, yeah.
Against baby Hitler?
No. We can't go that far back.
Why not?
I might be able to pull 1920.
Okay. So teenage Hitler?
You're going to have to act like a jaded art student.
Oh, man, in Germany? That's going to be tough. But my thing is, like, if you go, even though you want to go back and change some horrible things, who knows what the effect and cause of that is?
Right.
So by stopping a murder in the future, how do you know you're not changing things in the future? You're changing.
They were supposed
to
go down that way, yeah.
Yeah, maybe it was supposed to happen that way, and they don't really touch too much on that in this movie.
Because they really aren't able to, because the precogs, the way that they're set up, is they can't see the entire future.
Yeah.
They just see when murder happened. Yeah. And so it's, and, you know, they briefly talk about other crimes, and I like the way they explain that away, where it's like, well, we can't really stop rape because, you know, most of the time rape isn't premeditated or whatever, but you know, they might be able to stop it, but you just can't do it on a case-by-case basis the same way a murder can go down and we're going to know about it ahead of time. But the prosecution behind that, the fact that they're testing it in Washington, D.C., which is the capital of all, you know, litigations and politics and stuff like that, it's such an engrossing movie. And again, that's why I'm so happy I picked it on the airplane, because I totally forgot I was on a plane.
Let me ask you this. A lot of people talked about in the Movie Minority Report, and if you look at a lot of people who discuss this movie in the past, there's been a lot of issues with the ending of the movie. Some people felt a little unsatisfied by the ending. Without spoiling it, were you satisfied with the ending?
Totally.
You're totally satisfied with it?
I was totally, yeah. And I think a little bit of it was, just as a viewer, just the shock and surprise and the the appreciation I had for how it told the story up to that point, where okay. I just didn't see what was coming until it was too late. I felt like Rocky and Rocky 2 when he's got that bum eye and Mick just keeps slapping him and Rocky's got no idea what's coming. That's how I felt watching the movie. Yeah. So the fact that the movie wanted to go in that direction, I was okay with.
Okay, interesting.
How are you? Were you?
I'm a little mixed on it. Mm-hmm. I feel like the movie has so many great build-up scenes that kind of really deliver. I think the ending kind of just... It's not like Mission Impossible is a giant bomb that's about to go off.
Right.
It's not like a huge action sequence to end a movie. It really is kind of... It's him doing more of like... I don't even know how to describe it without spoiling it. But it is not like a huge action set piece to end the movie.
Yeah.
It just kind of... Story kind of... You know, tells itself at the end, and it's not really done through action.
But don't you think that's more of it being honest and true to what Taylor was telling, as opposed to being like, well, we got to do one more big action scene.
I do, but when you have the whole movie feels like it's adrenaline rush. Mm-hmm. It starts with the action scene. Then the whole movie is him on the run.
Right.
And so it does feel like an action blockbuster for the whole time, but it doesn't end like an action blockbuster. It ends, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think it's just when you're like, oh, it's over.
Well, that's a dude who's forced into action. I mean, he's a cop already, so he's going to encounter action, but he's forced into action against his will, as opposed to a guy like Ethan Hunt, who literally, Ethan Hunt, if he takes a vacation, the guy is still a daredevil and a thrill seeker, because he can't, like, most people don't climb rocks by themselves on vacation. But that's what Ethan Hunt chooses to do. Like, the guy in Tom Cruise's character in Minority Report, if he's going on vacation, he's just doing a lot of drugs and watching old home videos, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true.
A lot like Van Damme and Time Cop.
There you go. Good point. I really do want to revisit this film. I own it on Blu-ray. I should just watch it again. It is one of my favorite Spielberg films after 2000, because he really went on a spell where he was trying to do smaller films like Terminal, Catch Me If You Can, which I love Catch Me If You Can. Terminal's okay.
I never caught the Terminal, but is it almost fair to say, and I don't want to penalize Minority Report, but is it fair to say that Minority Report is the best non-classic Steven Spielberg movie?
What do you mean, like outside of
the all-time greats? I'll throw Jaws in there, I'll throw Close Encounters in there, I will throw Jurassic Park, I'll throw Schindler's List, E.T.
I really love Lincoln.
In the Indiana Jones movies. Lincoln...
It's a totally different movie, but that might be his best movie.
I would say Lincoln, as of right now, is a non-classic Spielberg movie, so it's probably between Lincoln and Minority Report.
For the 2000s?
For the non...
Are we missing anything? Yeah. Adventures from Tintin?
I thought Tintin was great.
I thought it was great too, but I wouldn't put it up there with Minority
Report. It's not as good as Minority Report.
War of the Worlds, I had a lot... Even though it's a fun movie, I had a lot of problems with that movie. Especially towards the end.
Yeah.
Man. How did you feel? Were you a big fan of Bridge of Spies? Because I thought it was kind of slow and...
I thought it was good.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah, it was good.
But when you go, when if you look at, you know, which I always end up boiling everything down to sports teams, where if you look at a sports team that's headlined by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg and a worthy best supporting actor in Mark Rylance, right?
It's like Belichick and Brady.
And you expect that team to go 14-2 and get to the Super Bowl and win it. And this one went 11-5, made it into the playoffs, maybe won the wild card game.
Yeah, and we're out the first round, maybe.
Yeah, and so, especially with that premise going in, I thought it could have gotten really political thriller intrigue, and some of the shots that were in the movie, like the way that he used shadow, and I don't usually get into this kind of shot composition stuff when I'm watching a movie, but if it affects me, I'm sure it affects a lot of other people, too. It's just the way he used some shadow and lighting, and I get you're trying to make a point, it just kind of took me out of the film for whatever reason, so.
Yeah, I understand that. All right, so that basically covers my report.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit more about some other things we have talked about, because I haven't seen you in a while.
Hit me, man.
Let's talk about your top 10 list, because for me, one of my favorite things at the end of the year is the top 10 list. Mm-hmm. I love seeing you and Christian's list. And in the past few years, I have agreed with Christian's more. It just, not that I agree with it, it's just our lined up a little bit more similar.
It's okay for more people to be wrong than just one
it's
person.
It's okay. Yeah, totally. Your number one film of the year, I believe, was Star Wars.
The Force Awakens, yes.
Yeah, and I think the betting money was you and Christian would have that as the number one. Mm-hmm. Christian actually went against it.
He went Ex Machina 1, and then I think he went Star Wars
number 2. What was your number 2 film?
Ex Machina.
It was Ex Machina. Guys were just flip-flopped right there.
Yeah. Huh? No. The Martian was 2.
Martian was 2 for you?
Ex Machina was 3. Yeah,
wow,
for me.
You love
Ex
the Martian
was 3. I think The Revenant was either 4 or 5.
Okay.
And then something else that I gave 5 out of 5 schmoes to was the other top five movie.
Interesting.
But I think
Creed was in your top five also.
I think Creed was four. I think okay. It went Revenant, Creed, Ex Machina, The Martian, and Star Wars. One of those might be flip flops. Let me ask you this,
because my number one was Mad Max Fury Road. I thought it was a masterpiece. Creed was my number two. Mm-hmm. Like for me personally, and I said this when we did our top 10 video with the B team.
Yeah.
If you put like a Schmoe's choice in front of me, I'd probably take Creed over Mad Max, but I couldn't ignore that. I just felt like Mad Max was perfectly done. Whereas even Creed, I could argue you could probably edit a couple things out.
It was, yeah. I mean, I personally didn't need the motorcycle chase scene, or the motorcycle chase, with the motorcycle, like the kids attack. Echoing the running through, no, in Rocky, or in Creed.
When I know you're talking about now.
And when he's going on a jog, and it's like, I get it, it's like when Rocky was training, but I still appreciate it for what it was doing.
Yeah.
But Mad Max was just such a...
Was that in your bottom 10?
It was in my bottom 10, yeah. I think it was number... It was somewhere from 6 through 10. I really don't remember.
Gotcha. It's cool. Like, here's the thing I wanted to ask you is, like, I look back at my top 10 list from the last previous years.
Right.
Has there ever been a time where you feel like your number one has changed over time? Because sometimes you do get caught up in the season. I mean, Star Wars was at an all-time high. Now, I'm not saying Star Wars isn't going to be your number one next year. But, like, looking back, I had Selma number one. I had Whiplash number two.
Right.
Now, looking back that list and watching the films again, I think I might have overreacted a little bit to seeing Selma. Mm-hmm. I think, if anything, I would have made Selma my number two and Whiplash my number one.
Yeah.
But I still love both movies. Is there anything like that in maybe the past few years where you're just like, oh, man, maybe now looking back, I would put this over the other film?
I don't think it's going to happen with Star Wars.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen because, I mean, I really studied that movie five times in a theater, and I love Star Wars so much.
I got so much hate because I had problems with that movie.
Yeah.
which is fine. Yeah.
But if it's a dead heat between Star Wars and The Martian and everything else is equal, then I'm going to go with the Star Wars movie because that's one of the ways that I break a tie, you know, is that you look at the film, and if the films can't sort themselves out, then you have to go to an outside thing. It's like a tiebreaker in football. It's like, now I got to look at schedule or whatever else. So it's Star Wars, and the fact that it was Star Wars and it had this mountain of hype to climb over, and it managed to succeed brilliantly so in doing that, then I was so taken away by that movie, and I just thought it was such a great return to form for the franchise and what the promise of the future is. So
I wish I could have been in a screen with you guys because I went with Andy Signor, Ken Knapsack, Alicia Malone. I was with Alicia Malone's plus one.
I remember I was here the morning you guys were going.
Yeah, and I watching that movie with everybody. We all enjoyed the hell out of that movie.
Yeah.
But the buzz out walking out of the theater, everyone was like, it was good.
Yeah.
No one was going out high-fiving thing. That was like the best movie of the year. No one was walking out like, listen, you were very different circumstances than what I saw it. You went to the premiere of Star Wars. Probably one of the best days of your life.
It was one of the best evenings of my entire life and career. I totally get that. But after seeing the movie at the premiere, I had the same feeling you guys did. I was like, here was my take initially, was that I loved watching it and I liked the movie a lot. And then the movie started to grow on me over time.
Okay.
And so the criticism you can make about my list is that I allowed the movie to get its claws into me because I got so deep into it and digested it and kept going back and see it again. If I saw Creed five times, maybe I'd like it. But if you're going to put a movie under a microscope five times in a theater, there's also the chance that you see more of the flaws than you see something else. Like, I don't know if I saw Mad Max five times, if I'd walk away more impressed every time I saw it, or I'd be like, yeah, you didn't really need that, or that didn't look right, or that's a useless line of dialogue, or there's just no story here. But with Star Wars, every time I saw it, I ended up liking and appreciating what they did more. So that's why. I mean, if you were going to look at my number one movies over the years that I did
last year was Dawn of the Apes, I believe, right?
Yeah, and I don't think there's anything that's going to knock an Apes movie out.
Gotcha.
I don't think there's anything that's going to knock Zero Dark Thirty was number one one year.
Zero Dark Thirty number one.
I think did I did also? Too, yeah. And and the only one that I think I want to go back and revisit.
Yeah.
Is a Steven Spielberg movie at number one.
Oh, did you put War Horse number one?
I certainly did.
God!
I certainly did.
I'm back in my head, I'm like, I knew he really liked War Horse, but he didn't put it number one.
I think I did.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, and again, I got to see what... I might go home and watch that video because I want to see what else came out that year that I might go back and watch. But War Horse I thought was so well done.
Interesting.
And it was so great to see Steven Spielberg do World War One. you know?
Yeah.
And the way he told that story. And like maybe I'm a sucker deep inside for animal movies. I didn't know I was, okay. But maybe if I was a movie reviewer in 1989, I would have made The Adventures of Milo and Otis number one, hands down. But
hands down number one.
Yeah, I really got taken aback and swept away in a world of imagination by that goddamn horse.
And it's being a reviewer is tough when you take a stance like that and you're kind of alone in that stance, because very few people I knew liked that movie, and if they did like it, it wasn't close to number one. Me, at that point, I think I was just starting with you guys, and I remember thinking, oh, wow, War Horse?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, obviously people are going to scratch their head a little bit, but listen, you're not the only critic to do that. A lot of critics go out for certain movies that just connected to them, and they put it in the number one spot. Is it hard for you sometimes, like, when you are the only one championing for a film, do you ever feel like, oh, maybe I'm wrong, or is it maybe it's just, you know what, personally, that's the way I feel.
You got to have thick skin to do this.
Yeah, of course.
At first, because you are going to get a lot of comments either way. And you know how I feel about stadium rock. Like if you're talking about like Van Halen or Guns N' Roses or even like Journey or something like that, it just makes people happy, right?
Yeah.
That's what I prefer to see in my music. But every so often, it's nice to not be the stadium act that pleases everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's nice to be that underground punk rock band that pisses the majority off.
Okay.
But man, the fans that come to see punk rock shows in sweaty underground clubs, they're the most fervent supporters. You just jam out three chords all night long. So sometimes it gets to be good. So with 13 Hours, that's what happened, is that the masses were certainly not supporting me, but I had there's a click that's going to come in and say, you know what, you're right, we agree with you. So
yeah,
you
I
know,
understand that.
Being on an island is not necessarily fun, but sometimes it is cool to be a heel. I never seek it out. I don't like it, but sometimes it's nice to see a different perspective of humanity. Then you go on the internet and you're like, everyone's just awful.
Yeah, YouTube comments are the worst.
Yeah.
I often say, like, if this was Ghostbusters 2,
yeah,
the slime underneath the city would be caused by YouTube comments.
That's hilarious. It's just a bunch of pink.
It's just hate. It's just a river of hate.
Yeah, I had one guy the other day, he was commenting, and I don't mind if you comment, you voice your opinion, but when you start commenting on everybody else's comment, that's when it pisses me off a little bit, because now you're just infiltrating your hatred on something else. One guy actually said, he was like talking about how the schmoes, we only have 250,000 subs, like that's a bad number. And he's like, the reason why they don't have more subs is because of Ellis. And I'm like,
what?
And he's like, and I'm like, okay, so for my own show, you think the best way to get my own show more popular is for me to quit doing my own show? The show that I wanted to do is a show that I should no longer be a part of if I want to see that show do well. It's like, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah. When I did movie fights for the first time the end of last year and I won, it was funny seeing most of, I got a lot of love from the comments, but every once in a while, there's somebody who just comments with, it's not even like they were mad at the way I fought. They're just like, the fat guy in a hat, I don't like his voice.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, hey, man, thanks. I'll, you know, smoke some cigars and try to work on that for you. I like to comment jokingly back, but it's just like, I don't know where they come with the mindset of like, oh, they're on YouTube, so I have free reign to just talk shit about
it. You got to keep it positive. You got to, you can't ever show weakness.
Nope.
And again, you don't know what's going on in people's lives when they write that comment. You don't know what their mental state is. And people, I guarantee you this, people who comment like that online do not do that in person.
If you
met them in person, it's going to be a very different ballgame.
Totally agree. But that's YouTube.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I like to end the show, Mark, with quick thinks.
Let's
basically, we tweeted out, what's the last movie you watched? I'm going to read out your Twitter handle.
Okay.
I'm going to mispronounce your last name, probably.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about, real quick, just your quick thoughts on the movie.
Hit me.
All right. Clay Williams, big fan of the Schmoes. Clay Kid 100. Last movie he watched was Sin City, the first movie.
Oh, man. I remember seeing that, and it took me like 10 minutes to get into the vibe of it. And, you know, the way that it is like a comic book jumped on screen, or like a graphic novel
jumped
on screen. And so, but once I got locked into that, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's a movie, you know, I haven't revisited in a long time, actually.
Yeah.
And I missed the sequel. I just skipped the sequel.
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah.
I think it was just too late.
And I do like Bruce Willis. I remember liking Bruce Willis in the movie and Clive Owen.
Right.
But I remember trying to rewatch it after it came out of theaters, and for some reason I just couldn't keep my attention.
Yeah.
So it's something I need to revisit. I haven't seen in a while.
It's a tone you're either into or you're not into.
Yeah, I think that's it. And so I think maybe it's a mood for me. Like, am I in a mood for Sin City? Because it's a mood kind of movie. Christopher Woodburn, at Joker something. I can't see it. The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight?
The Dark Knight. Not Rises, which is a movie you and I, we stand we're on a pedestal where you and I do not love.
That's
the Dark
what
Knight
I was
Rises.
Saying with the Dark Knight Rises. Yeah. When I started hating on that a little bit initially.
Yeah.
That was me being a punk rock band, and then I turned into Green Day because all the masses started to agree with me and say, yeah. No, actually, that movie isn't good.
No, I was working.
Or not as good. I'll say.
I was around the show at that time, and yeah. I remember being on your side.
Dude, and I needed it.
And then Harloff loved it.
Yeah.
And it's so weird when you think you know somebody's taste, God. And then it just goes the complete opposite. But I think a lot of people have joined us in the Dark Knight. It's not a horrible movie. I understand. Yeah, but it's got problems,
God,
man.
It pisses me off more and more every time I see it. But the Dark Knight is just
amazing.
About perfect.
It is just about perfect. Yeah.
Iconic performance by Heath Ledger. It's great seeing Batman have to go through a moral dilemma like that. It's the perfect sequel to a comic book movie, and it might be the best made comic book film ever.
I agree with you, man. Heath Ledger absolutely kills it in that movie. Mm-hmm. And what else can we say?
And Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
God, I love.
Just one of the best movies.
So good.
Joe H. Dez. I don't know what that means. At Joe Hernandez 201. Room with Brie Larson. Did you see this?
I still have not seen her.
Because this was very... Me, Copster, Cody, and Ace all had this in our top three, I believe.
People were raving about it, and I have the screener on my desk at home, and I just... Have not been able.
I can't imagine that. Like, I asked Harloff, I was like, dude, do you think you would put this on your top 10 after he saw it? And I think originally he said no, but then I think he kind of wavered on that because it's one of those movies, once you watch it, sticks with you, man.
It's funny. I haven't even seen the movie, and I'm already rooting for Brie Larson to win.
Yeah, she's so good. Yeah. And that kid really deserves something. I don't know what.
I heard that, yeah.
It's unbelievable. One of the best performances by a kid ever. So, yeah, definitely see it. I think Shmova would love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Let's see what else we got here. Ooh, Chris Zimmerman, friend of the show, at Zimbimbim, Bone Tomahawk. Did you see Bone Tomahawk?
No, everybody's telling me I gotta dig into Bone Tomahawk. And it's like, you know what, that movie, every time I'm on the road, okay. I'm like, I'm gonna buy that movie on iTunes and watch it on the plane. Then I'm like, that's not a plane movie. Because
definitely not a plane movie.
I don't want somebody in the seat next to me puking.
Totally understand. I saw it. I really enjoyed it. I saw it before we did our top 10 list because I heard some people were putting it in their top 10. I wouldn't put it in my top 10. But it's a very throwback to old school Western.
Right.
At some points in the movie, it gets gruesome. I'm talking like Green Inferno type gruesome.
Oh, wow.
So it's a weird mix of a really old school Western. And then at some points, it brings the violence to a really higher degree than you think it's going to. So it's a little jarring.
Yeah, I'll put it on the list.
Put it on the list. It's a slow movie, but I do recommend checking it out. David Wright at David Wright 96. The Deer Hunter. That was an awesome experience, is what he wrote. Have you seen The Deer Hunter?
Yeah, I mean, it's like awesome experience is one way to describe it, but God, that thing is intense, dude.
That's funny, though. It's intense for about 30 minutes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The whole beginning, there's an elongated scene where like they're at a wedding.
Right.
Before they go to Vietnam. Then it jumps to when they're in Vietnam, and it's one of the most intense filmmaking for like 30 or 40 minutes while they're being captured and they're out there fighting. But then the last hour of the movie is like what happens once they get back to their home and what they're dealing with and Christopher Walken, what they dealt with. So like when people, I think some people go into thinking they're getting a Vietnam War movie.
Right.
When that's really a small portion of the film.
It is, but that experience, it might be the perfect encapsulation of what the Vietnam experience was like for people who had to go over there, you know? So,
no, totally.
So yeah, and Walken,
it's a rough movie.
It's amazing to see Christopher Walken be like so young. It was made, you know, in the late 70s, but also still be singularly Christopher Walken, you know?
Totally.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Russian roulette scene is probably one of the most famous scenes in cinema. If you guys haven't seen it, just be prepared for a very slow paced film for the first hour, maybe even the last hour, but that middle, it's amazing. Yeah. It's a great character study. Great cast, like you said, De Niro. Yeah. Meryl Streep, I think this is the first time she was nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
One more that we're going to call it a day. Spencer Howe at Mercedes Spence, Interstellar. I'm trying to remember what your take was on Interstellar because it was a movie that divided a lot of people.
It was a polarizing movie. Actually, I remember seeing it with some of the screen junkies. I think Andy was there. Mundy was definitely there. Howe was there.
Oh, really?
They were not as impressed. I think Spencer was there.
The whole screen junkie crew does not like that
movie. They were not impressed. Mundy was visibly shaken after it. But,
was he really?
I liked it. I didn't love it like I thought I might. You know, again, you go in Christopher Nolan and it's outer space. We're traveling through some sort of dimension or wormhole or whatever. It had the promise of being phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I don't get too much into hype again once I'm actually there watching the movie. I just felt like it lost its legs a little bit. at the end. And I liked what it was. I liked the ambition. Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes I get impressed more by what the filmmaker wanted to do than by what they actually were able to pull off.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I've never, like, I admire the movie almost more than I like it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching, I'm like, I admire so much what you're doing, but I think the most important thing when telling a movie is the story.
Yeah.
And that's, the stories were kind of felt kind of short for me.
No pun intended. It aimed for the stars.
It literally did. Yeah.
Just, it's like it was going so big and so bold. It forgot to build a foundation as much of what I think it could have used. But again, like, and I even like the way the movie resolves itself. I thought that was cool. I like the very ending of the movie. Seeing that.
Okay.
And it got a little lost in the shuffle sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that's because it didn't have a very solid foundation, because I liked a lot of what that movie did. It just wasn't the greatness that I thought it could have been.
It had a lot of ingredients. Not all the ingredients worked.
And it's tough to follow a movie like Gravity.
Yeah,
which came out the year before, and everybody's like, oh, that's this year's Gravity. And it's like, no, they're totally two different movies. It's hard. I think it was hard for a lot of people to get that out of.
Yeah.
Visually, it's hard to get people to get Gravity out of their head.
Again, I really, just almost on a technical level, I really admire the film for what it tried to do, and I love this. I think the score worked, even though a lot of people complained it was too loud. There's certain sequences I would just cut out of the movie and show it to somebody on a big screen, and be like, it'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
But it just didn't come together overall as like a story for me.
Would Anne Hathaway steering a ship around for a booty call be one of those scenes you put, or maybe that's one of those ones?
That's one of the ones.
People are like, no, it's about love. Yeah. It's about true love. Shut up.
That whole speech.
Risked the entire planet to go get ass.
I know. Yeah, I know. So the movie has its problems. Again, I enjoy aspects of it. I actually recently rewatched it because I just wanted to give it another chance. And it's the same thing. It's one of those things where I'm like, man, there's part of this movie I just absolutely love in a vacuum. But when you put it all together, just a lot of some of it doesn't work.
Because I've heard of people that I think, maybe even Christian, but I don't want to misquote him, I think he went back and watched it again and
he
was really impressed by it. Yeah,
same thing with Stuckman. He went back and liked it even more like the third or fourth time. And for me, it's kind of like, I feel almost the same way I felt the first time. I enjoyed parts of it, but as a whole, it didn't really come together.
It's a movie that I would give it the benefit of the doubt of revisiting. You know?
Yeah, no, I have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, but I did that for Dark Knight Rises, and I hate that movie more every time I see it.
Yeah, Dark Knight Rises, so many problems. Like, I love Tom Hardy as Bane. That's the only thing that really keeps me coming back.
I'm going to sabotage you next time I do the show.
Okay.
I'm going to sabotage you, and I'm going to watch the Dark Knight Rises the night before. Just like come on here and bitch about it for 45 minutes.
I was with you when that movie came out. There were so many problems, especially with the ending for me.
The ending sucked. It's stupid. Yeah. Every fight scene looked fake to me. It looked staged. The punches aren't landing. The reactions aren't correct.
My biggest issue was, like, I was so impressed because I thought Nolan brought Bane in to show that this guy physically destroyed Batman in a fight, okay?
Yeah.
And I said to myself, oh, this is great. Batman's going to have to use his brains to beat this guy. He can't just go up and punch him.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he do? He goes out, trains in a hole.
He heals
his
back magically.
And what's his plan? I'm going to punch you in the face.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, you just... totally missed opportunity. Again, we're probably going to get a lot of comments just from this
Marion
portion.
Marion Cotillard's destiny.
And then they made Bane a second fiddle.
It turned into Adam West Batman at the end. I didn't want that. You know?
The Adam West movie, there's a scene where he has a giant bomb and he's running out of the harbor. It's the same thing. But you know what? I have similar problems.
It's done
I have similar problems with Force Awakens at the ending.
That's fine. But
that's another episode, another podcast.
We're focused on Episode 8, Rogue One, and Batman versus Superman.
I think when I get Christian on this podcast finally, we might have a little Star Wars rumble. And again, I like Force Awakens. It didn't make my top 10, but it was like, if I was doing a top 15, it would have been in the top 15.
Yeah.
It just missed my top 10, but I really enjoy a film, but I can't help but, like, it's like when everyone's just loving something so much, part of me is like, what am I missing?
Right.
I need to find out.
Right. All right. Well, I won't text either one of you guys for 3 hours because I know you guys are going to be engaged in
podcast. I'm trying to get him on the show, guys. I try to get him on today for later, but he's a busy man.
Yeah.
Luckily, you know, you live pretty close by to where I do the show.
Always nice to come on here and say, well, I tried to get the other guy, but Mark was available.
No, I got you first.
We found him sleeping in a bush outside the studio. So.
The reason why Ellis has been on the show 3 times is because
I have heart.
He has heart and he wants to come and do it with me.
I actually like you.
Harloff is just just a busy guy. You know, listen, he's a family man. I understand. I get it.
So basically, the point of this podcast was check out Minority Report and don't have kids.
Perfect. All right. So real quick, Ellis, tell them where they can find you.
You can find me on Twitter or Facebook, all the good stuff, at Mark Ellis Live. That's also my website. We can get upcoming tour dates, which include this weekend, Valentine's Day weekend, I'll be in San Diego at the La Jolla Comedy Store. And next weekend, I'll be at the St. Louis Funny Bones. So you can get tickets at markellislive.com. And make sure you check out Schmoes Know on YouTube. You can subscribe there and check out all our movie reviews and go back. Watch me gush about 13 Hours. Watch Christian gush about Dark Knight Rises. Whatever you want to do, have a blast.
All right, guys, you can catch me at Schmoes JTE. Do me a favor, listening on iTunes, you felt like we gave you a 5-star podcast, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating. I think we did.
We crushed it.
We crushed it. Also, catch me every Sunday on Box Office Breakdown, where me, Tom Dagnino, Sarah Stratton break down all the big numbers for the weekend box office. It's a lot more fun than it sounds, I promise you.
It's a blast.
Also, check me out on the Schmoes Know Phase 6 coming soon.
Yeah, there'll check out some Box Office Breakdown versus the Schmoes in the final of the Ultimate Schmodown.
Exactly. And I'm hopefully one day to face you and or Christian in movie fights.
Bring it.
I'm looking forward to it. You guys are your strong competitors. I want to play the best.
I'll roll out of bed anytime and move to fight anybody on this planet.
Great. All right, guys. Also, catch me on Screen Junkies, Screen Junkies Plus. We got awesome shows. And speaking of Interstellar, I did want to mention, check out their Honest trailer. It's one of my favorites of theirs. The Honest trailer for Interstellar is one of my favorites. It definitely points out some of the problems I had with the movie, and I think you'll tend to
agree. I'll watch that, and then I'll decide if I'm going to go watch the actual Interstellar.
There you go. Yeah. Perfect. All right, guys. Thanks so much, and keep watching those movies.